At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Spectres, welcome back to another great, wonderful, marvelous week of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, N7 the Legend, and I am emphatically trying to include other adjectives to describe this show because I realize that I have used exciting far too much. Genesis is my co-host as always, and Genesis, how are you doing?
Enthusiastically good tonight.
All right, we're breaking out the Thesaurus, and that is not an alien life form. So we started episodes on Arya's lore from the comics, and then we got totally sidetracked. But here we are, 14 weeks later, and we're coming back to finish the job. Not the only job I want to finish with Arya, but that's where we are.
Okay, 14 weeks? Seriously? That's a really long time. I didn't realize that it had been that long since we talked about Arya, but I also didn't realize that we'd been doing the show together that long. And now I'm trying to think back of when we started doing this together. When is our 1 year?
I want to say it's around the new year, isn't it? It's around January at some point.
That's right. New year, new ME.
Yeah. See, I remember. That was a test. I know you well enough.
It wasn't a test. I honestly forgot.
Yeah. Okay. So when we left off with Arya, what were we talking about, Genesis?
So we had discussed the first half of the invasion comic, and that was where we see a Cerberus ship invading Omega and having an adjutant on board. We met General Olog Petrovsky and an Agent Ash, both of whom were human Cerberus agents working on taking control of Omega, but in their own separate ways. And the iconic line that we left off on was the elusive man telling Ash, "I am ready to start the real battle for Omega."
Oh, okay. Right. The mask comes off because at this point, Arya was totally under this impression that Cerberus was, quote unquote, there to help with the adjutant invasion. But it's completely reversed now. The game is afoot, so to speak.
We're all over the place literally tonight, and I'm here for it because that theme also will follow through.
Yes, it will. So the plan is in action. Agent Ash has, and I think goes by both Agent Ash and Colonel Ash, but Colonel Ash has now stopped pretending to quote unquote help Arya and Omega and get rid of those adjutants. But Arya is still in orbit with Petrovsky under this impression that Cerberus is there to help. So really interesting detail here in the prelude to the second half of this Mass Effect Invasion comic that we're referencing. The narration mentions that those Cerberus invaders who are flying ships toward Omega have come from beyond the Omega 4 relay. Now, Arya thinks that those are adjutants flying those ships. It's Cerberus, of course. But regardless, Cerberus is coming from beyond the Omega 4 relay. So that's kind of surprising, considering that I don't remember any scene in the game specifically on camera where it shows Cerberus has a base there.
It's true. I don't think that we see it, but we know that Cerberus has definitely sent ships there because that's where they got some of the data that we received from Mass Effect 2 and knowing all of that. And then again, this time frame is in between the events of Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. So we got to think about what's going on in that as well. But obviously before the relay got disabled or destroyed.
And that's how they got the Human Reaper. So it's no surprise that they went there. What I guess I am surprised about is they amassed such a force there that they could use it to stage the invasion of Omega. I mean, what better place to do that, right? Other than beyond the Omega 4 relay, which is technically so far from Omega, Arya might never have suspected it. And yet it's a backdoor right into Omega.
And a backdoor right onto Arya's mainland of holding.
Yeah, probably a lot of people wondering about that backdoor after seeing The Matrix, but I won't go down that road any further. Now, okay, so Arya is on board Oleg's ship, which is named the Elbrus. There's a ton of mythological references here, by the way. And she does not realize the invaders are Cerberus. She's under the impression they are adjutants. So the Elbrus and Arya's merc ships are getting absolutely decimated. And the Elbrus itself is nearly falling apart, and that leads Arya and Oleg to debate strategies here. Should we advance toward Omega, just try and plow through that line and risk death before we get there? Or do we back off? And if it's the latter, then where would we even go? I don't think it really takes a lot of imagination for anyone who hasn't read this comic to understand that Arya doesn't want to back off. That's really not her style. So she suggests that they disable or somehow take out the mass relay. And surprise, Oleg is not a fan of that idea. I wonder why Oleg doesn't want to take out or disable the mass relay that his own troops are coming from. And so we've got a panel here from the comic up on the screen, and you can read some of the dialogue boxes if you're watching along with us. And you can see that Oleg is quoting some old military doctrines in the midst of this battle, presumably to prove how much he loves history, how very smart he is, and how much he loves World War II documentaries. But he then tells Arya that the Elbrus is fitted with the right IFF to travel through the Omega 4 relay in retreat. And he spins this as, well, we should go to the source of these invaders to find a solution.
Well, okay. So the source to find this solution. Arya doesn't find it at all peculiar that Cerberus happens to have the same IFF capabilities as the mysterious invaders.
Yeah, right. That is kind of a huge hole where she might be like, am I walking into a trap? I guess the only excuse you could find is that she's so frantic because the ship's getting torn apart and she's more focused on leaving. She does not want to abandon Omega. Like, that is full stop. It doesn't matter. She doesn't want to abandon her station because she is Omega, if you remember. But ultimately, this isn't up to her because Oleg is flying the ship and it's on fire. So there's little time to think here. And at the same time, Arya's second in command, Anto, is monitoring this whole situation from the control room on Omega. And he sees Arya's transponder go through the Omega 4 relay, and then Anto gets an idea.
Oh, isn't he the little enterprising Salarian?
Well, or you mean Batarian, but well, Arya's gone. I see an opportunity.
Well, that sounds more Krogan. I don't think I can do the Batarian voice, but he sees an opportunity. He's like, it's time for Anto, whatever his last name is. It mentions it in the comics. I can't remember it. It's time for Anto to take control. And so he starts basically turning on Arya the second she's gone. So now it's his plan that in Arya's absence, he's going to become the Pirate King.
Yeah, no, there is no Pirate King of Omega. that's not going to happen at all.
No, like bro, calm down. You are not on screen enough in Mass Effect 2 to become a main character. What are you thinking?
No.
Come on, dude. I see that Maya has decided to make repeated appearances on the Lorecast.
Uh-huh. She's the third co-host of this podcast, I swear.
For those of you just listening along, I can see Maya's striped tail with a white tip extending just above Genesis's mic and now wrapping around her neck. Now it's in her nose. Hi, Maya. She wanted to be included in the conversation about Arya.
She's got a thing for Arya for sure. So I understand.
To be fair, who doesn't? But Arya and Oleg, they arrive at a Cerberus station once they get past that Omega 4 relay, which the narration reminds us is the most inhospitable environment in the galaxy for a few reasons. Number one, deadly radiation. Number two, the immense debris fields that will tear a hole in any ship trying to go through it. And number three, the supermassive black hole at the middle. So it is really truly a feat of engineering and technology that Cerberus could build anything here, let alone an operational base.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And I mean, I remember watching that scene during the suicide mission where it is extremely dangerous to be going through this relay. And that's with Joker manning the ship on one of the greatest ships built in order to fly through all this.
And with all those upgrades that the Normandy got in Mass Effect 2, you have to wonder, did the Elusiman just take note and keep records of those? And is like, oh, okay. Well, with all of these upgrades, Shepard made it. So we'll just use some of these upgrades in the base that we're building. Oh, and by the way, here's a massive collector base that we can data mine.
Mm-hmm. I also really liked the station name. The station name of Avernus. And, you know, that's definitely a hellish zone. It fits.
It is. And for those mythology buffs out there, they'll probably recognize Avernus because of Lake Avernus, which was the fabled entrance to Hades. So, of course, the Elusive Man would name this base Avernus because Cerberus is what guards, the underworld from the land of the living. And Avernus is the entrance between the underworld and the land of the living. One might think that he kind of missed an opportunity to call the Charon Relay Avernus, but Charon being the ferryman of the River Styx. Anyway, never mind. This isn't a mythology podcast. It's a Mass Effect one. And on the Avernus station, Arya is first to be on the station, not from Cerberus. According to Oleg.
Huh. I mean, that's not cool. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do with that information because it's not like an achievement. Yay, Arya, for being the first at something. It's like, what the hell? She's probably pissed about this situation.
And I would be getting increasingly suspicious if I were Arya. I would be getting increasingly suspicious because she has such a huge base so close to her system. And Oleg even calls it this staging area for our studies in this sector. But she calls it bullshit, saying that it's just a depot for their Reaper relics. She advises Oleg to just blow up the damn place, quote, but you won't because you don't want to lose your wretched treasure trove, end quote. I found that to be a really interesting thing for the Pirate Queen of Omega to say. You won't blow up this place because you don't want to lose your wretched treasure trove. So even the Pirate Queen has some standards.
Yeah, she does have standards, but also I do like, you know, it's a wretch. It's a treasure trove. These are very piratey things. Arya.
Ah, Avernus Station be cursed. I heard old Pegleg walking down the hall.
Oh, man. I need more pirate dialogue from Arya. That's what I need. Ara needs an eye patch at some point. Maybe she'll show up in the next game with an eye patch. Who knows?
Maybe.
Aren't Asari also kind of like lobsters where no one truly knows how old they get? I'm kidding. Anyway, so the two are being escorted by a Cerberus detail inside this base, inside Avernus. And they get to this lab where a scientist tells Oleg that they were experimenting on an adjutant trapped in steel. First of all, horrible idea. Don't do that. I don't know what provoked you to do. Actually, I do. I know exactly who provoked you to do that. But don't do that. Because they were experimenting on an incredibly deadly mutant trapped in steel. Trapped. When it began whispering to them.
Didn't we see this already in Mass Effect 1 where it did not work? Even the Salarians who were in cages and in cells and completely shielded away could still hear the whispers.
And you know what's totally inexcusable about this whole thing? Cerberus knows from firsthand experience, from the experiments that they ran on those Uncharted worlds in Mass Effect 1. So Timmy Boy knows what the hell he's doing. And he knows damn well that they're that this is likely to get out of hand, especially if he's aware that he is the villain. So now most of the facility is overrun because the whispering led to the adjutants breaking free, and then they killed people, and then they did what adjutants do. So speaking of which, adjutants start attacking this lab that they're in. And while Arya, Oleg, and the Cerberus troops are trying to hold them off, that scientist transforms into an adjutant too, which is really cool because there are very few points in the lore where we see that adjutants create other adjutants just through like this almost zombie-like proliferation.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see it, especially the way that they have it laid out in this comic book, just the transformation that happens. I mean, in theory, we know that that's how husks work. And I guess we do see it when Saren gets completely reaperfied and we see his transformation. But to see it from an adjutant's side is also really interesting.
Right, exactly. And so cue the badass battle sequence, because there are some super cool artwork panels of Arya here, and I'm going to show them on screen right now. Arya whips out the biotics. My phrasing's on point today. And she is just unleashing what I can only describe as a biotic Kamehameha in one part of this. And it just kills all the remaining adjutants. But as we know about biotics, the harder you push, the harder it pushes back on you. My phrasing is on point. I'm really not trying to do this. These just Freudian slip after Freudian slip for me today. But it knocks her unconscious. And so Oleg is tending to her, and he then orders the crew to get a medic, which you might think is rather chivalrous and and magnanimous even for a Cerberus officer to do, especially for the Pirate Queen. But you would be wrong, because he then gets a call from Timmy Boy, and the elusive man tells him that we actually don't know what's said on the other side, but he ends the call. Oleg ends the call and then starts carrying Arya away. And Oleg is saying to Arya, I guess, even though she's unconscious. So Oleg is saying, not much of a reward for your efforts here, my dear, but the fortunes of war are what they are. I'm sure you, of all people, will understand.
I really just don't like this guy. I don't like him. I mean, I know why I don't like him, but this just adds to it.
He's got like big, kind of like, he's got like big Plenty of Fish 50-year-old creeper vibes. Is that just me?
He's also giving off, oh, I've read that before. I know what you're talking about. Or, oh, you haven't read that book. You only watched the movie. Wow. Yeah.
He is. I am very smart. And then he wonders why he's alone. This guy is so very clearly single.
Yes.
Like, this guy is so clearly single. He's the guy who you have worked with, who goes on and on about his extensive wooden duck collection at home.
I prefer rubber ducks. Thanks. I'm going to walk out on the conversation.
Okay. That wasn't a personal attack. That was actually, I was drawing from a little bit of experience there. And sorry to that guy if he somehow got interested in Mass Effect and he's listening. But anyway, you get my point. They're walking away with an unconscious Arya, and she wakes up, and there are some biotic dampener handcuffs on her. And Oleg is standing right next to her. Crisscross, right? So she's confused somehow. I don't know how she hasn't caught on yet, but she's confused until Oleg shows her a recording of Agent Ash. Last she knew, he was in custody on Omega, but it turns out he broke free, killed some of her mercs until he got to Omega Control, and then he killed most of them, too, in Arya's command center. And then he gets on the PA, and he announces to Omega that Cerberus has killed the last of the creatures threatening Omega. I'm just imagining what Ash's voice sounds like, because we don't see him in the game, so... But Cerberus now considers control of this station vital to protecting the galaxy against the Reaper menace.
Wow, we have different voices for this character in our heads.
Can I hear yours, please?
Oh, see, for me, he's actually a really well-drawn-out character and is kind of attractive. So I definitely heard something a little bit more suave in my head.
I was thinking Empire from Mark Star Wars.
Mark Hammond voices this man for me.
Really? Okay, so I was thinking more like Domhnall Gleeson's character from the newest Star Wars trilogy.
Who did he play?
I can't remember his name right now. He's like an officer. The famous scene is when he's in the AT-AT and Luke decides that he wants to meditate and go Super Saiyan. And then he's ordering. Yeah. Anyway, Kylo Ren is aboard. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about? The redhead Star Wars, Colonel. I think he might be, from the Empire. Anyway. That's how I imagined Ash. I still want to hear your Ash voice.
No, I can't pull off a Mark Harmon.
You could try, but I'm not going to put the spotlight on you anymore. Okay. So Arya points out here that the adjutants actually came from Cerberus territory in Avernus. So what the hell is Ash talking about? And of course, this is the Cerberus playbook. Create an emergency, sweep in, and you're the savior of said emergency, and use that to seize power. Wish we could say this was novel.
No, unfortunately, it's very much not the first time or the last time we see this happening.
I try not to watch too much news. But anyway, with that, let's go to the mid-break, shall we?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, here we are in the middle of the show, and we've got 2 new reviews for everyone. One comes from Hostronaut on Apple, who leaves a 5-star review and says, As someone who works in the space industry, okay, super cool, first of all, this game for me has been one that inspired a vision of a future of space exploration and development, and hearing you all talk about these topics each week has made me pick up the game again and again, appreciating it that much more. Thank you for all the research you put into this episode, or into each episode. And at this point, I am wondering to myself, how many more topics can you cover left in this game? You all keep finding more, hoping there's still a lot more to discuss in the future. Indeed there is, Hostronaut. Thank you for the kind words. And you can't see my creative living schedule. No one can. It's my page. But I have a lot. I have a lot of topics left to go. Enough to last us at least another year and a half, maybe 2 years. I don't know. We'll see. That's the fun part. I always come up with more topics as I'm doing this show. But anyway, thank you, Hostronauts, so much. I'm very curious about what you do in the space industry. I'm also supremely jealous. So if your company's hiring, let me know, because I'm unemployed. Genesis, we also have another review, but this one sent to us in a message on Patreon.
Yeah, from Karina. And it says, while I'm here, I want to say how much I love your podcast. You pour so much heart and effort into it, and it really shows. This show has helped me through some very difficult times, and I truly can't thank you enough. I'm looking forward to chatting with you soon. Take care.
Thank you, Karina. That's so kind of you. Yeah, I try to leave everything on the field, so to speak, with this show. The show's my baby. And I know that every week Genesis tries to do the same.
Yeah, I have a story very similar. I'll just take a 2 second tangent here. And I, like 2-3 years back, I was leaving a dear friend's funeral. He died way too early in life, and I had been mindlessly listening to the Lorecast on my way to the funeral, paused it, left it off, got back in the car after the service, and I heard you and Tom just laughing at some corny joke. I don't even remember what the joke was, but the combination of just like this dark mood that I was in and then the laughter that was pouring over my speakers just had me cracking up right along with you guys. And I was like, thank you. I needed that in this moment. And you guys were literally right there for me.
You never told me that, that story. That's the first time I'm hearing it live right now. And I feel humbled, because I remember listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is going to be like a domino, like a Matryoshka doll of, of, hey, I was going through this traumatic experience and I found a podcast. I was listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast when I was going through a little bit of a rough breakup. And I just remember being able to completely take my mind off of it and like getting lost in the lore of the Elder Scrolls, which I love it so much. So it's unreal to hear that this show has had that effect for other people. But I'm hoping that we can continue that tradition and helping people through their workday, helping people through this or that. And if that's you, then you can leave a 5-star review. Hopefully 5 stars. Maybe it's 4 stars. Maybe it's 3 stars. I don't know. But if you do leave a 5-star review, we'll read it out here in the middle of the show. You can leave it on Apple. However, we have been pulling from Spotify comments recently. And you can also, if you're a patron, just send us a message on Patreon like Karina did. So thank you to Karina. Now, Genesis, I have a voice line that I want to quiz you on. And I think this is a pretty good one. So, all right, let's go ahead and play this. And I'm stalling to give Genesis time so that she can unmute the stream and hear it on her end. She's giving me a thumbs up, so I think she's ready. Anyway, here we go.
I think that story would be perfect for you. The hidden dark side of the most beautiful race in the galaxy.
All right, I'm going to play that one more time, both for the chat and both for Genesis. So here we go.
I think that that story would be perfect for you. The hidden dark side of the most beautiful race in the galaxy.
All right, Genesis, you got two plays. Do you need one more?
Sorry, there's the 6 second delay from on Twitch. So you keep like talking right as the final parts of Samantha Trainor speaking. So I know that it's ME3, Samantha Trainor talking at some point. I just don't know the exact scenario. So if you could play it for one more time and then wait until I give you the signal.
Yes, you're 2/3 of the way there. I'll play it one more time. I'm going to reply to something on Twitch.
I think that story would be perfect for you. The hidden dark side of the most beautiful race in the galaxy.
Okay, the beautiful dark side of the most of the hidden race of the galaxy. Is she talking about Tally?
You were very close with Trainor and Mass Effect 3, but it was not Tally. I'll give you one more guess.
Is she talking about Liara? Like, this one has me stumped.
Closer. So she was actually talking about, she was talking to Diana Allers, if that helps. And Allers was doing a story on the Arda Yakshi.
Oh, okay. The fact that it was over an intercom should have clued it in that Trainor was talking to somebody in one of the side rooms and doing a story on it, that would have been Diana Allers, who should have been somebody else.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is obscure enough that it's not going to be like an easy kind of low hanging fruit. But anyway, I'm glad I got you. I got you. This one's going down in the history books. All right. So all right. That brings us to the point of the mid break where we thank our new patrons. We have two new patrons, Aspire for More and Butts, 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 which is a really fun name to say. Butts, Butts, Butts is our newest Shepherd tier patron. So we've got some Shepherd Butts on the way. Hopefully we see Shepherd Butts at our end of the month patron chat. And we have our tier 5 patrons besides Butts, Butts, Butts to shout out: William, Superfly 440, Retrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Curacy, Ed Boy, and Draco. Thank you all for your continued support of this lorecast. And with that, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Solarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
And we're back. And now we've got a real situation on our hands. Omega is being occupied by Cerberus, and Arya is in captivity on board a Cerberus station in the deadly heart of the galaxy. Genesis, what happens next?
A lot. You kind of went over a little bit of this already, but I'll kind of summarize it in how I was reading it, because we view things differently, and I like that about us. This may be standard Cerberus practice, but standard Omega protocol is to seize the opportunity. The Blue Suns and Blood Pack are already pushing back against Cerberus, not only to regain control from them, but also to take it for themselves. Arya really is the only one who can keep them civil, working together, or at least working towards the same goal.
So the thing here is that I don't think anyone should be surprised that Arya's gone. All of a sudden, Cerberus is an absolute shit show. Like, because you've got the Blue Suns, the Blood Pack, and the Eclipse, who were all waiting in the wings, and the only person who had a iron fist that kept them in line was Arya. Now Arya's gone. So we've got this power vacuum, right? And all hell is breaking loose. Meanwhile, the adjutants are there, and Cerberus is there. But it's not really like the Blue Suns even care that Cerberus is there.
Right. They are definitely taking Omega for themselves, not necessarily because, oh, I'm fighting against Cerberus. No, they see Cerberus as an easy opponent to take over and therefore gain the control of that part of Omega.
Right. So I remember a couple panels in this comic where Agent Ash goes up with a Cerberus escort in the middle of a firefight between Blue Suns and Blood Pack, and goes up to a Blue Suns merc and basically goes, "What the hell is going on here?" And then the Blue Suns are like, "Who the hell are you?" Basically, it's like they're like, "We're a little busy. We're fighting the Blood Pack, because when the Adjutants invaded, we tried to push them back. And then Blood Pack, we were in Blood Pack's territory. At least some of us were. Blood Pack got pissed off, tried to kill us. Screw them. We're going to try and kill them." And then Agent Ash is like, "Oh, my God." And then walks walks away. Which is pretty much the panel. Like, if you read it, I'm totally paraphrasing here, but meanwhile, all of this is going on and Arya is thousands of AU away and she is on Oleg's ship, right?
Yes, she has been knocked out and placed in biotic blocking shackles. A rigor has suspended her by those blockers that cover her hands to her elbows and a second set around her ankles.
Hey now.
It's actually done really cool in the artwork as well. Seeing these, it almost looks like biotic fields of that are holding her in place. And I think it's drawn out really well.
I would tend to agree that I like the way that it's drawn out. However, I do have to mention that during this panel in which I'm seeing it, and I wish I had taken a screenshot of it right now, I have to wonder, why is Arya being held horizontally in these biotic shackles? I mean, and she's not just being held horizontally, but she's spread eagle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a weight distribution that's involved in rigging, and it being held upright spread eagle is more strain on your wrists and you can dislocate your shoulders. Having your center mass being distributed that way is actually a safer practice.
I'm not going to ask how you know that. I'm not.
It's just weight distribution.
Yeah. Anyway, what does Oleg say?
Oleg says that no one has ever realized how biotically capable she is, and that no one has ever truly known her true power level. And that kind of raises some interesting flags, because we see how strong Arya is in the games and in these comics, but Oleg is saying that there's even more to her than we haven't seen yet.
To me, it sounds like Oleg intends to find out, but in the worst possible way.
I think he probably is going to. I have a little inkling on how this whole mission plays out by the end of the game.
Yeah, right. You could say that again.
All right. But Arya, of course, does wake up for this. And her first question is actually, how long has she been out of it? And the only way that Oleg responds is that it was long enough for him to read a physical book version of War and Peace. I don't think we have seen a physical book in the trilogy, like in the game.
I do have to correct you on that. So there are a couple times where we see books. Number one, the gift shop. In Mass Effect 3, I believe, and then also aboard the Normandy in Mass Effect 2 in Kasumi's quarters.
Do we see any of them actually reading it? Because there is also like the little library section in Kaidan's bedroom in Mass Effect 3, but I don't think we ever see them holding and reading a physical book.
No, I don't. Come to think about it, I don't know if that was in their animation repertoire. I could be wrong. I don't know. But anyway, Oleg, you were out long enough for me to read a physical book version of War and Peace. Like, yeah, we get it, dude. You're very smart. You're very well read. My God, is this guy annoying.
You were out long enough for me to read the book version of War and Peace. There you go. I'm trying to give you the Oh, that's the wrong character. Mark Harmon is Ash, not Oleg.
Yeah, there we go. That was the Mark Harmon thing. Anyway, skip back to like the first half if you want to have that in context. So, Arya is not dull. So she, and I imagine she hates being talked at like this while she's restrained and Oleg is flaunting his rather lack thereof intelligence.
Yeah, because not only is our queen strong, she's also very intelligent. And she quickly works out that the adjutants weren't just a mistake that escaped, but probably part of the elusive man's plan to take over Omega. And then we see another doctor that is about to place a mental blocker in Arya's head. And so that way, not only are her biotics controlled, but what if she has biotic capabilities that don't require her hands? Some people can just send thoughts. Some people can blast center mass instead of going creating a ball Kamehameha style through your hands.
I think I know now why Arya was at first an exotic dancer.
Yeah, she does have a great center mass.
And apparently biotic capabilities that do not require her hands.
Of course, our pirate queen, she shows off yet another level of epic by throwing her head back and busting the face open of this doctor. It's a great moment. So she breaks free from her restraints and we see... I believe this whole damn podcast is a spoiler alert. No, Oleg has a chat with Timmy Boy, and he all but confirms Arya's suspicions that the adjutants were a setup, which seems to actually surprise Oleg.
That is surprising.
Yes. The fact that Oleg didn't, not the fact that he didn't see the elusive man's plan coming from a mile away, but it's not surprising that he wasn't let in on this plan because we all know how much he loves to compartmentalize. So, but the fact that Oleg didn't see right through this like Arya did, that is surprising.
And for me, it's surprising that Oleg wasn't clued in on this because Oleg has such a level of authority of command over this entire operation that you would think that the elusive man would want his general in charge in the field to understand that the adjutants were a setup. But yet again, we find this situation in which, you know, we saw it in Mass Effect 2 with the elusive man lying to us about the dormant Reaper and numerous other things lying to us, omitting the truth. And he does it again to Oleg. So I guess we should consider Shepard not special at all in that. Even Shepard was lied to. Of course, Oleg is.
Yeah. So back to Arya, through her sheer martial and biotic force, she is able to take out enough Cerberus agents to make Oleg redock on Omega, which is wow, because she threatened to airlock the remainder of the crew. And Oleg actually agreed that he didn't want any more Cerberus lives needlessly lost. And I appreciate that, which is weird for me to be taking Oleg's side, but he's actually being protective of his crew. They are all human, though, so it makes sense.
Right, now, Oleg, but he has an ace up his sleeve, right?
He does, because he was just going to turn on her in the last moment. But again, Arya saw that coming from a mile away, and then went to kick his ass and completely broke free again, making it back to Omega. So that is how Arya got back on Omega. And the next few pages, actually quite a few pages, is just a lot of back and forth of Arya working with the Merc groups and Oleg trying to outmaneuver her. But for me, it really boils down to page 253 of the omnibus version. It's a beautifully drawn out page, and I hear the narrator boxes being voiced by Arya in my head. It follows the same theme of that Oleg is trying to run old human battle stories, trying to get the previous wins that we know from history and lore retold as his own. And I will read the narrator boxes for you. For General Petrovsky, every engagement provides the chance to test another earthly military maxim on a cosmic battlefield. Here on Omega comes the chance to test from one of the ancient fields of jungle warfare. The guerrilla wins if he does not lose the conventional army. The conventional army loses if it does not win. Cerberus is not the system's alliance, but there is much about its military that is conventional. Highly skilled, regimented, professional, ready for anything, except a battle in which none of the normal rules apply. And I just think that that is so perfect for everything that Arya is doing. She knows that the person she's up against in this fight is going to be regimented, is going to be following the rules of engagement, is going to be following these old school battles. Except we're on Omega, baby. Those rules don't apply. So Arya was able to combine and command all of Omega's mercs. She set up a glorious trap with a Blue Sun's hideout, but it was being guarded by a Blood Pack Varin and Eclipse mechs. It was the third squad of Cerberus that she had taken out through pure ruse and ploy, and that is my pirate queen.
I had shown that panel up on the screen because there's so much action happening in just those two pages. And of course, this is like the perfect cat and mouse game, or should I say like immovable object and unstoppable force game between Oleg and Arya, where Oleg is so rigid. Right. And Arya is the definition of fluid. She doesn't really have any rules or credo that she lives by besides protecting Omega at all costs. She doesn't really have any strict rules. She's going with the flow and constantly manipulating and maneuvering to find the upper hand in every situation. Whereas Oleg is so big into his military doctrine, he cannot think outside the box.
Exactly. He is all about send the soldier that way, make the reports read out this thing, do everything like this. And Arya's like, no, let me mix and match. Let me recombine. Let me play with the configuration of who I have to work here. And it just makes it for a beautiful play. And then, yeah.
I was just going to say that it also plays to Arya's talents that she's not commanding just one force. She has the Blood Pack, the Blue Suns, and the Eclipse, among other mercs, who all have different talents. And Cerberus is at least a one-trick pony in terms of they have their specialists that they seem to only use against Shepard. But in this battle, they seem to just be throwing waves of mechs and assault troopers at everything.
Yeah. And at the near the end of this, Petrovsky is realizing this, that this full frontal attack is not really going to work. And then he makes his play and he calls for the pullout.
Hey.
And Omega is again an open city. And that the adjutants are loose again. Now, Arya knows that this is a lie, but not exactly how. And she realizes that Oleg is playing this off thinking that it's MacArthur in Manila. Now, I don't know this story.
And this is a World War II reference, but go on.
Okay. Because Oleg is not the only one who can read, thank you very much. Arya is also queen. Now, the next thing that we see is that she is scouting out a group of humans and knows enough of her own Omega citizens to clearly see that even if they are in Blue Sun's armor, they aren't her people. She can tell that these are Cerberus playing dress up. Live by the ploy, die by the ploy. She springs her own trap inside of the setup trap inside of a setup inside of a ploy. It gets really meta in here.
Crisscross. All right. And so what is her trap?
She sends Anto and a few other mercs, a Krogan, and a Vorcha, posing as refugees that had been hiding out in the former Plague Zone. And so there's a cute little callback to the Plague Zone that we cured. And unfortunately, Cerberus knows that we cured the Plague Zone. So they know right out the gate that these are not refugees. So, yeah. Unfortunately, Ash also had an agenda running right side along Oleg. And he decided to free a Reaper adjutant and let that wipe out the competition. That adjutant then killed Anto, but then it killed Ash too by attacking him and turning him, beginning the transformation into an adjutant. So we get to see this transformation starting again. Arya took down the big giant beastie, and while Ash is transforming, Oleg killed him.
I can just hear Ash right now. I can hear him going, "Go, my little minion." And then the adjutant like six onto, and he's like, "Yes, yes." And then it finishes eating onto, and it turns around and looks at him like, "Rrr." And he's like, "No, what are you doing? No."
I like that voice for Anto, or for Ash much more now. Okay, we'll stick with that one.
See, yeah, I knew you'd come around. All right, so Anto's dead, so no usurping for him, but Arya and Oleg are still around, even though Ash is dead too.
Yeah, so the 3D chess is still being played in this moment. And Oleg reveals his original plan that was part of the setup And he now has enough Cerberus ships surrounding Omega to completely obliterate the base and burn it to the ground.
Would he really do that? Because the Elusive Man, according to Ash, wants Omega as a staging base?
I think that he wouldn't necessarily burn everything to the ground, but there's enough firepower to decimate the population of Omega. And I think it's the threat of the population, not necessarily the base itself, that is what Arya decides is the price is too high to pay. And so she decides to make a run for it. And that doesn't seem like our pirate queen, but it's the right choice for Omega as a whole in this moment, and that's why she chooses it.
So she does care.
She does care, and she takes that. But not until she reminds Oleg that in the end, MacArthur retook that city, meaning that somehow, someday, Arya will return.
Okay, I see that World War II reference coming full circle with MacArthur returning to the Philippines. That's awesome. So that really leads us into the very beginning of Arya's Omega DLC in Mass Effect 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the final panel is her on a ship flying out, and then it says continued in the events of Mass Effect 3. And I was like, oh, there's just something exciting about reading that, even though I already know exactly what's going to happen. Trying to picture about like how if I were reading this before I got my hands on ME3, like how cool it would have been to already have had this story going on in my head going into the Omega DLC.
Yeah, come to think about it, I didn't read any of the comics before playing all the games. I wonder if anyone has, and I'd love to hear from them. Especially, you can leave some comments on our YouTube or Spotify, or you can email us. But that is all we have for the rest of the Mass Effect Invasion comic. I know last week we said we were going to talk about Paul Grayson, and I promise you we're going to get there, but we got a little bit more lore to talk about with Arya, if I'm not mistaken. And so I do want to finish off Arya's episodes, and then we will jump over to Paul Grayson, probably throw in some corporations if we can find them between now and then. But Genesis, this has been a great episode.
It has. Arya is always great to talk about, and I love learning more and more of her backstory.
I do too. I will never turn down a chance to view Arya's backstory. But that is all we got for this week, Spectres. Genesis, how can people get a hold of you? What do you got going on by next week?
Yeah, so you can always hit me up on the Discord. It's Genesis with a J. You can also follow me on the social medias. I rarely post, but at least it's a way to connect and DM if you would like. You can also catch me on the Two Girls, One Ship podcast, where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer, and the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we explore the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future for all things cyberpunk.
All right. Highly recommend all those shows. In the meantime, I am kind of playing stay-at-home dad right now, so I don't think I have any streams coming up. I'm trying to work that back into my schedule. Also, still busy applying to other jobs for a full-time job. So life is busy right now. But if people want to chat over Discord in the Robots Radio Discord, I'm always down to chat. Just join and then go to the Mass Effect Lorecast channel. You can tag me with your thoughts of the most recent episode. And until next time, Spectres, we should go. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.